This episode of the Cord Cutter Podcast is dedicated to the loving memory of a fallen subscription service, CISO. You started in January of 2016 with the aspiration to entertain the masses, but Saturday Night Live and shows by Dan Harmon about Dungeons & Dragons just weren't enough to cut the mustard. May you rest in the same way your profit margins did shortly after launch. CISO's dead is the point of that. One bites the dust. It's Mick Jost here with Cinema Blend for the Cord Cutter Podcast. Always, as always, got Adrian here with me.
Hey, guys.
And today on the show, we're going to be discussing tons of great stuff. We got some exciting news regarding Netflix and Disney, and we're also going to be talking about the new Netflix series, Atypical. But first, let me introduce our guest. He has, hands down, 100% the coolest last name you will find on CinemaBlend.com. Absolutely wish it was my last name. Corey Chickazola, how are you doing?
I'm great. After that introduction, how can I be upset? We're great.
I remember the first time I joined Cinema Blend when I was in the chat, your name popped up, and I was like, this dude, I was like, that is hands down one of the coolest last names I've ever seen. And I feel like I even told you that at one point. I'm not sure. If I didn't, there you go.
All I know is now I can brag to the other editors and tell them that their last name is not the coolest. So there.
I know. No shade to Adrian, by the way. Jones is, that's, I mean, it's not bad.
Jones is a boss last name.
All right, so last names aside, we got important stuff to get to. Netflix and Disney announced they are breaking up. Well, Disney announced it, really, during their earnings report. They said they're going to be breaking away from Netflix at the end of 2018 and then eventually launching their own standalone subscription service in 2019. Guys, does this affect you on a personal level? How are you feeling about this news?
I don't care.
Corey, do you care before I let Adrian go on one of her trademarked rants?
I mean, I think it's a bummer just because I feel like those big properties like the Star Wars and Marvel movies were like a major selling point for having Netflix, although there's so much original content. So I feel like it's a bummer for Netflix users that they're going to have to possibly purchase yet another subscription in the future.
That's a good point. Adrian, you don't care. You're like by Disney.
I mean, I love Disney movies and stuff like that. I don't know. It never occurred to me that this was going to be like a permanent deal anyway. I'm surprised that they stepped away from it so quickly after, I think they just like finalized this deal like last fall or something like that. So I'm kind of surprised they stepped away from it so soon, but it never seemed like it was going to be forever anyway, because these types of deals get reworked all the time anyway. And I'm really not that surprised that they thought, hey, well, we can make extra money if we just get our own subscription service going, because there's a ton of Disney movies that kids watch over and over and over again. And I don't do that. So, you know, I see a movie once, maybe twice, and I'm good for a long time. I don't need to sit and watch Frozen or Moana, you know, 14 times in a day or whatever. So,
absolutely.
Like Corey said,
I get that.
You know, it sucks that, you know, there's possibly going to have to be another subscription service for people to pay for if they want to just constantly have that Disney content going. But as long as my Marvel Netflix shows are okay, I'm cool.
But valid point.
Do you feel like there's the potential for it seems like everybody has a streaming service. Mm-hmm. I mean, does the point, it's called the Cord Cutters Podcast. Is it going to just kind of become
the new cable?
Yeah. I mean, are you going to end up paying just as much money as you would by being able to get all of these streaming services?
Yeah.
It's definitely like, It almost feels like this bit of news coming out feels like it's going to be the beginning of that. You feel like when Disney is like, all right, it's time for us to branch off and make our own subscription service, which I think they also included. ESPN is going to have their own stuff like that. Mm-hmm. It almost feels like that's what's happening. Like, are we basically just by the time everyone cord cuts, it'll just be, this is what you do. You buy on-demand channels. And then people will be like, oh, it's such a pain to have to pay for 15 different channels. And somebody will be like, well, what if we bundle all these channels together? And then like, yeah, before you know it, we're like back into cable.
It's back to
cable.
I don't know. I mean, I think definitely more companies or whatever are going to start having their own streaming services. But the cool thing about it is that unlike getting a cable subscription, if you don't want 15 news channels, you can just say screw it to all those news channels and you can get just HBO, just Showtime, just Netflix. And if that's good enough for you, you're fine. And that's not going to cost you anywhere near as much as paying for cable, where you're going to have a bunch of channels that you don't watch. So
it's true. I have a lot of channels I don't watch. Yeah. There's like an easy 100 that I don't watch for sure.
See, but and that's way too many.
It is definitely way too many. I don't know. I feel like the writing was on the wall for Disney stepping away this whole time. Because I was just kind of like, after I saw the news, I looked. I was like, what Disney movies do I need to watch before this is gone? I got like a wave of panic over me. It's like, I need to watch them all. There's like, it's not a very good list. You got like Moana on here. You got Finding Dory. Okay, Zootopia. Yeah. Those are good. But then you're getting into the like real B section of like Mulan 2. Brother Bear 2. I didn't even like Brother Bear 1. Piglet's Big Movie. Like, these are not films, like, when I think of Disney, I think of, like, the Disney Princess films. I think of, like, The Little Mermaid. I think of, like, Tarzan. Tarzan 2's on there, by the way. I don't think about George of the Jungle, but they don't even give me the George of the Jungle that I want if I wanted to watch it. Like, I feel like Disney was never really all in and putting their movies on anyway. I didn't even know they made a George of the Jungle 2, by the way. That's a thing, apparently.
Haven't they made a sequel to every movie they've made, but it just goes direct to video? I think that's what they did for pretty much all of them. But yeah, I see what you're saying, where it's not even like all the A-list Disney movies that are on Netflix that are going to be coming off. There's like maybe two A-list titles, and then the rest of them are just crap most people aren't probably watching anyway.
Let me just jump on that again, because I just can't let this off my chest. But they not only do they have the worst sequels on there, they don't even have the sequels that I would want to see. Like, I wanted to see Aladdin 2 or Aladdin 3, where they have, like, the golden hand. Did you guys ever watch that one?
Yeah, the Aladdin sequels were solid.
Yeah, they were awesome. But yet, they are completely gone. We're dealing with Pocahontas 2, Journey to the New World.
Is there Lion King 2, Simba's Pride? Because that one is solid.
No, it's not. I was actually just getting ready to say that one is not on there either. It's like so, all the so ones that were worth anything. So any of the good
sequels are completely absent from Netflix anyway. It's just the bad ones.
Yeah.
So it's really,
I
mean, just
in terms of Disney animation, there's some good, you know, you got Heavyweights. You got some of the great live action ones from back in the day that are going to be going away. And I'm definitely going to miss those for sure. Me and my wife definitely enjoy like sitting down and like watching a show that we used to watch all the time in grade school or something, just on a casual night. I don't know. It's just rubbed me the wrong way. I feel like Disney was never really in this. It could have been a lot cooler.
Yeah. So will you be paying for the Disney streaming service? Because you've said before, you feel like you don't like to feel that you're missing opportunities to watch stuff.
You're just like invading my mind right now, because that was like, I had that moment where I was like sitting. I was like, when I read the news, I was like, am I going to have to buy this Disney service? And like, ultimately, I don't even watch that many Disney movies.
Yeah.
But like, I started thinking about like, well, what if like, you know, by 2019, I might have a kid or something. And that kid needs to watch a movie. So maybe I should just like prepare in advance. It's kind of weird that Disney's doing this, because it makes you wonder like exactly what they can bring to the table with this service, you know? Like, you know how Disney films work, right? How they go into the vault for years and they're super hard to find. Is that maybe going to change when they do a streaming service where like literally the whole library is going to be available? Or how do you guys think that would work out with them? What do you think they're like aiming for with a standalone service?
I don't know.
I mean, if they're trying to really get people to do it, they should probably have the stuff from the vault. They should probably have like all of the Marvel stuff and the new Star Wars movies. Like if they put all those into a streaming service, people are going to buy it. People are going to want to watch their Marvel, have like a sure place where all of the Marvel movies are going to show up and the Star Wars movies. So I think if they like manage to get all the big stuff together, people will probably cash out some sweet dollar bills to be able to keep up with the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
I'm also wondering how much this is going to cost, because a lot of streaming services aren't that expensive on a month-to-month basis. So I'm wondering what the price point is going to be for something like this. If they're going to go relatively cheap, like most streaming services, or if they're going to be like, we're Disney, we own lots of crap, let's make people pay a lot of money, you know?
Or if they'll Absolutely. they'll do the Hulu route, which is like you're paying, but you still have to watch commercials. Mm-hmm. Or you have to pay some extra. Maybe they'll do like a two-tiered system. That seems like a very Disney move to squeeze out a little bit of extra cash. Mm-hmm.
Maybe if you buy Disneyland passes, you get a couple like months free or something like that. See that? I don't know. Maybe.
That's smart.
You brought this up earlier, Corey. A big point of contention, because I don't know if it's been explicitly said as of yet, but I think they haven't really decided whether or not Marvel films and Star Wars will be leaving with the Disney movies. Does that hurt Netflix for you more so than the Disney movies leaving if Star Wars and the Marvel films leave?
I think
Marvel TV is fine. Marvel TV is not going anywhere.
Right. I think it probably would be a negative for people. Those are big, big properties that made their way onto Netflix pretty quickly after it was released to home video. I feel like that is the point of contention, that people are going to be really like shaking their fist at the Disney gods, because they're not going to want those things to go away. But as Adrian said, these deals are constantly changing and things are on Netflix for a series of years and then they're not anymore. So it's like, how bad can you really be when you know that Netflix is constantly changing its lineup and negotiating new deals with these studios?
Yeah. And I think if Star Wars stuff goes away and Marvel stuff goes away on Netflix, I don't think that's going to make anybody cancel their Netflix subscription, because there's so much other stuff on there, you know?
And Netflix is TV now, more so than movies, which is the way it started out. I mean, that's real. People are paying for the TV content, so that's probably not going to change anyone's mind just because they can't watch Rogue One anymore.
Mm-hmm. That's true. That's fair, I guess. I don't know. I'm kind of jaded. I'm just recently working on a list where going through the worst Netflix original shows. And like, there are definitely like some top tier stuff that Netflix has given us. But then I was like, in a hypothetical world where all we have is Netflix content, I'm like, yeah, that list kind of like thins out a little bit. Once you start taking away like the Marvel movies and stuff, all the stuff that you would just watch, like as it pops up, you're like, oh, let me pop on Rogue One because I'm tired of watching 8 episodes of this a night. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know how I feel about it. In other news, because I feel like this is relevant, Impossible Shade from Netflix back to Disney, signing that exclusive deal with Shonda Rhimes going forward for series. I don't know. Maybe I'm reading into it too much, but I feel like in a way that was kind of like a middle finger of Netflix back to Disney for like publicly being like, we're getting out of this relationship. Like, yeah, she's still going to be able to work on Grey's Anatomy and like be involved with ABC, but like anything new from this point on, Netflix is like, we pretty much like own your bread and butter right now. I don't know. How do you guys feel about that move?
Yeah, I mean, there's a whole night of television on ABC that now moving forward, Scandal's ending, Grey's will probably just never end, but that, you know, that is she's a big source of content for them. I don't know. I think it's pretty rough. Although I will say that because Shonda Rhimes shows tend to kind of go off the walls eventually because they have too many episodes and too many seasons, that something like Netflix, it might actually really rein her in a really positive way so that plot points kind of make more sense and are more focused. And I think a shorter episode count does a lot of favors for people as well, because 22 episode seasons are crazy pants nowadays. They're like almost unheard of.
Yeah. I don't think... Mick, do you think that that was like a direct, like, fuck you to Disney?
The only reason
because
I say
sure,
it
I'm
is
sure
because
they started working on this deal with her way before, you know, Disney decided to back out of Netflix.
I just feel like the timing's very interesting in that it would happen, like, back to back. Like, Disney announces they're breaking up with Netflix. Boom, Disney solidifies, does whatever they can to ink this deal with Shonda Rhimes, and bam, they got it from ABC. Ball's in your court now. What are you going to do, Disney? And be like, we're going to take the Star Wars movies, I guess. I don't know what they're going to do next. But I don't know. I feel in a way it was one of those things where it was like maybe, I think they would have went after her either way. But I think it's one of those things where maybe once that news was solidified, they're like, do what you need to get this done, because we're going to get her because she's great to have anyway, but also screw Disney.
Yeah, or so. It might have just been a matter of like when the announcement was going to happen, and they just moved up the announcement to get a little hit back, you know?
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah, no. I think that kind of pettiness happens at a major level, for sure. Right? In the corporate world, I can imagine, like, the craziest stuff happening and that for the most petty of reasons anymore. Anyway.
Yeah.
That's neither here nor there.
Yeah, I can see that.
By the way, I meant to bring this up at the beginning of the episode, but I 100% forgot.
Okay.
Today's game is going to be an atypical game in the literal sense that it was supposed to be a pop quiz that I randomly throw at you guys while we discuss these topics. However, I got so involved and like impassioned in the Disney stuff, I forgot like to ask two of my questions in the middle of that. So let me sidebar real quick. First one to answer the question gets the point. What is the most recent Disney princess movie on Netflix currently?
Moana.
Moana.
Oh man, you guys both answered that at the same time.
That was cool.
Well, here, right, I just watched it last week, so yeah.
What'd you think of it?
I loved it.
I really liked it too.
Yeah.
Have you watched it yet, Corey?
I haven't. I know that's like really shameful, especially as a like theater nerd who loves like in Lin-Manuel Miranda, like being so involved in it. I mean, I know the I Want song. I know her big song. I'm off book for that. But besides that, I haven't really watched Moana.
Well, let me tell you, Jermaine Clement from Flight of the Conchords performs a song as a crab in that movie that might be like that is like one of my favorite Disney songs now ever. I just love that song.
Is he then?
Jermaine Clement's really just awesome, yeah. In general. He manages to make like the best songs out of like the most silly premises. Great guy. He's not an atypical, by the way, which is what we're talking about now. A show that is definitely...
Segway!
Definitely the most controversial we've covered since the show started. And honestly, I personally don't think it's all that controversial. However, I see the whole dynamic and what's going on. The show has been called everything from the best series that Netflix has ever given to straight up offensive. Where were you guys leaning when you watched the show? Did you find it offensive? Did you find it not offensive? What do you think, Corey? I'll let you kick it off.
I understand why it's a complicated question to ask. I did find moments of the show offensive, but actually they weren't related to Sam.
Ooh, what did you find offensive?
I thought that some of the writing for the women was a little bit offensive.
Dude, okay, hang on. Sidebar that, because we're going to talk about that later,
As far as the main subject of whether it is an offensive adaptation of someone on the autism spectrum, I feel like that's a really hard question to ask because it's just that. It's a spectrum. Nobody's the same.
Right.
So it's hard because maybe somebody I know, my loved one, might have benefited from therapy in this way. It doesn't necessarily mean that this character is, but I think that the juxtaposition is that he's so high functioning in the show, and they're always like, he's high functioning, he's in a mainstream school, he doesn't have an aide, he takes the bus, he like has a job. So there's a weird juxtaposition in the fact that he's so high functioning but then not even a little bit understanding social cues.
I think, like Corey was hinting at, this is probably a situation where if you know somebody with autism but the portrayal on the show doesn't match up with what you've experienced in real life, you might feel like it's a stereotype, as opposed to if you identify with the portrayal on the show, then you're fine with it. I think it might be that kind of situation, because I've read reviews where people with autism thought it was offensive and other people with autism thought it was just great. So, you know.
Yeah, I never felt like it was particularly offensive, like Corey said, to Sam in any regard. And for me, to your point, Adrian, I know someone from just like my personal history who has autism, who acts very much like Sam. He's very high functioning. You wouldn't really know until he flat out says, "Oh, was that weird? By the way, I have autism, just so you know." Like, it was just one of those things you just wouldn't know until he responded differently in a situation you would expect someone to normally react, or something of that matter.
And I think that while it might not be a perfect representation of a kid with autism and what he might be dealing with at the time, you can see that the people behind the show had the best of intentions. There's if people who don't necessarily understand how autism works put it on, they're going to learn something. They're going to have a new vocabulary and a better understanding of kind of the struggle. So while it might not be perfect, I feel like they're trying really hard to have a positively impacted and have the main character, the autistic character, Sam, have all these experiences and show that kids with autism can grow up into very high functioning adults who are living, you know, full lives. Like there's a lot of good to it, even if there's some imperfections, perhaps.
Yeah.
Right. I like one of the things that I really liked about the series to that point was the fact that you start off kind of, it's jarring to see how Sam reacts to things at the beginning of the series. If you're not, you know, used to that kind of reaction, you're like, oh, you know, it's kind of like kind of gives you that weird laugh where you're like, oh, that he just kind of reacted that way. But as you watch the series, I feel like you get more and more accustomed to how Sam is as a person, that you can kind of start to predict exactly how he's going to react, like going forward when other situations happen. It's no longer as much of a surprise, which I think is kind of like indicative of the fact that you're kind of learning more about autism as you go, or at least how Sam is an individual.
Yeah, like when his friend was trying to take him to a strip club, I'm like, that's not going to go well. That's right? Not going to work.
That was the moment for me when I was like, as soon as he's like, I'm taking you to a strip club, I was like, dude, he's going to freak out because of those lights and there's going to be too much sound.
Yeah.
And like, sure, as soon as it happened, it just gave me that like feeling of like, yeah, I get it, kind of, but not really. I get Sam. I liked his portrayal. What's his name? Keir Gilchrist. Easier to say than Chickazola. I'm used to it. We discussed that before the show. I had to make sure I got Corey's last name right. Even though I think it's so awesome, I guess I didn't know how to say it right. I liked his portrayal. I didn't think there was anything offensive about it. I don't think there was any time where I felt like Sam was not someone who suffered from autism. There was a point in the show where they do that at the group lecture where the parents are sitting there and they make the important distinction that there is no getting better with autism. There's just learning skills and improving. And I felt like that was something that was at least consistent throughout the entire series, was that Sam never really gets better, quote unquote. He just becomes more aware, and really, he doesn't really get better. He kind of twists all these things that he's learned, and then it kind of comes to a whole headlong. Spoiler alert, in case anybody's listening, you might want to jump out because we're going to get into spoilers pretty heavy here soon.
Yeah.
Moving on real quick to what, Corey, you were talking about earlier. The one thing that I found offensive, and apparently you did too, was the mom, Elsa, and her storyline being revolving around the fact that, okay, I don't have to take care of my son anymore, so I guess I should just have an extramarital affair. Like, it just immediately goes into, like, cheating. Obviously, you weren't a fan of it. Adrian, did it bug you at all? Was it one of those things that stood out to you?
I don't know. I feel like it was kind of like a typical way for the show to go. Now, you mentioned before that you feel like it was trying to villainize her. I don't think that's what the show was trying to do. I think the show was trying to make us feel bad for her and like pity her. Like, oh, this poor woman has devoted her life to taking care of her kid, and now he's growing up and he's trying to start to date and he's probably going to be on his own soon. So she doesn't feel like there's any real use for her in the family anymore. And she's trying to get, you know, love and validation from outside of her marriage and outside of her family. And I feel like it's a pretty typical thing, even though it's a complete double standard, for a show to take a woman's affair and have it be because they're bored or they're put upon or they're acting out on some bad situation at home. Whereas I feel like a lot of the times if a guy in a relationship on TV or in the movies has an affair, it's because he's just a dick. You know, there's no bad situation he's reacting to. He's having an affair because they want to show us he's a bad person, as opposed to reacting poorly to a situation. So I feel like it was a pretty typical thing for the show to do, but I wasn't offended by it.
Just to piggyback, I wasn't mad at that plot line necessarily, but there was just moments that I felt like the female characters were really through the male gaze. Like the therapist Julia, like, for one scene, has a friend, so that way she could talk about her problems with her relationship. And then we never see that friend again. Like, the only conversation between, like, two women in the show, mostly, was about, like, her relationship. Like, girl, let me talk to you about this. And I also felt that the way that the daughter, Casey, was like, I don't want to have sex, and then finds out that her mom, like, has her thing going on, and then runs into the bed of her boyfriend, and then is upset about it after. I'm like, oh, really? That's how her sexual awakening is going to happen? Like, none of it is going to be, and then she's going to shut off from her boyfriend afterward, like, when he didn't do anything. You know, I just felt like
there was again, that was a thing where she was acting out, obviously.
Right.
Even though, you know, it's not like she did that and then told her mom, oh, I had sex with my boyfriend, to try to piss her mom off. She never did that, which would have made more sense than just doing it and then staying quiet about it and getting pissed at the boyfriend who, as you said, did nothing wrong and even was like very clearly, he knew something was wrong and was very clear about asking her if she really wanted to do it because she just said she didn't want to do it, you know, but...
But even if that motivation was her motivation to having sex, like, that doesn't bother me. You know, there was one thing that happened and it led her to do something else. But then she couldn't, like, the writers didn't let her at least just be comfortable and happy and have that sexual awakening with a partner that she likes and is nice to her. Like, it still should have been a good experience, even if she was motivated by family drama. Does that make sense?
Dude, my eyes are being open.
Yeah, I see
right
what
now.
You're saying.
I feel like I'm getting an awakening of my own. I was like blind to all. I'm like, dude, they're right. They're totally right.
Like, wait, you didn't notice that's what she did? That she basically had sex with him just, you know, to kind of like get back at her mom?
I guess I understood that. Uh-huh. But from my perspective, I was focused on him being like, you sure this is okay? And she's like, yeah, it's okay. And then she's kind of weird about it. And then he goes over to the house and he's like, you know what? I said I loved you after that because I thought that was just what you wanted me to say. And then they get, you know, she gets pissed and they have this falling out. And then ultimately things get back together. It, for me, the message, it was just kind of one of those like typical high school romance deals. How like being in love as a teen is always super dramatic and like crazy at times. And I just like, this is weird to say, but like it just flashed me back to like, me being in a relationship, like just random relationship in high school and just all the random pettiness and miscommunication that goes on, showing that it's not necessarily someone with autism that can misread a situation or respond inappropriately to something. I don't know. I definitely see your guys' perspective on it. And I'm not even saying that this is any different. I came in that like whole situation from like a completely different perspective as far as like Casey and the having sex thing. That's like blowing my mind that we're talking about this right now. It's so cool though. I love that. That's why I love doing this. Yeah, I didn't like the, it's a love hate thing with the cheating storyline with
Elsa.
So
did you like Elsa in general, or did her having an affair just completely like shut you off as far as that character was concerned?
It just gave me like a uneasy feeling in my gut anytime I saw her on screen. Because I was like, oh, she's still screwing around with that dude. Like, get away from him.
Yeah.
It's going to go bad. At the same time, that those ending moments when you find out the dad, he's like, why would she put screen? You know, like, you know shit's about to pop off right at the end of season one where it cuts off. And I was like, oh, I was like, that really makes me want to see, like, season two. My wife, who was watching with me, she was like, oh. And I was like, there's no next episode. And she, like, was instantly pissed off.
Yeah.
But for me, that like that had me like super excited for season two. So it's like, as much as I hated the fact that they had, I wish she would have just like taken up painting or bowling like she was claiming she did.
Or just kept going to her dance class.
Yeah, just use it as like a way of self-discovery. Maybe even if she fell into a drug addiction, I'd be all right with that. But I felt like they went too quickly to the cheating thing. And that was something that really, it didn't turn me off on Breaking Bad as much. I always go back to Breaking Bad. I don't know why. But that's what it kind of reminded me of, where it was like, I have nothing to do. I'm in a conflicting situation, so I might as well go bang somebody. Like, I felt like it was kind of a disservice to her character. They could have explored they could have explored her parental side of it a little more. Because this wasn't just a show that people with autism would be watching. But families, I think, is the theme.
Yeah.
This is a show about families and how they deal with someone in their family having autism. And I feel in most parts kind of was a little honest. The fact that, you know, it's kind of all-encompassing at times. You have parts where you have to, you know, there's stuff that's normal to you that may not be normal to the other person that you have to, like, make room for in your day. While at the same time, you can tell that they kind of relish that time they have away from Sam, that they're able to do things, you know, and just not have to worry about autism,
yeah,
as she says.
I think one of the quotes I really like from the show is the daughter, Casey, who's a track star, gets invited to go to a better school. And she's doing an interview with one of the kids at the school to try to see if she's a good fit. And she says, at one point, she's talking about how her parents would talk about Sam when they were younger. And she says, I thought they were saying empties, which makes sense because it's like Sam takes up so much room that the people around him need to be empty. So that's how she kind of sees the situation with her brother. And it's one of those things where Casey is his younger sister. I think she's a freshman and he's a senior, but
she's a sophomore.
She's a sophomore. Okay. She's a sophomore. But she's younger than him. And it's one of those things where she definitely seems like the older sibling because she holds onto his lunch money every day until he's ready to get it from her. We don't see her standing up for him in school, but he mentions that she's always kept people from picking on him as they were growing up, even though she's the younger sibling. So
who's your guys' favorite character, by the way?
Doug.
Just out of curiosity. Doug?
Yeah.
What do you think, Corey?
I think I liked Casey the best. I really thought she was special, and she's like such a, I had never seen her before. I thought her performance was really exciting. And I also think she looks so much like Jamie Clayton from Sense8 that they need to do like a movie as siblings. I don't know if you guys watch Sense8, really? but the woman who plays the hacker, the hacktivist, they look so much alike that I'm like, oh, put them in something together, Netflix, make it work, keep it in the family.
Yeah, I really liked Casey too.
So I just want to go, Adrian, because you and I, same page. Mm-hmm. Michael Rapaport is Doug. I love Michael Rapaport in basically everything he does because he's like able to play basically the same dude. He just seems like a real like down to earth kind of working guy, and I felt like, I don't know, there was just a lot of, I just felt like I related to it a lot, which is weird because we're not even close to the same age, and I'm not a dad,
yeah,
or anything. But it was just one of those things where you just kind of really felt all his scenes where he was like talking about how, you know, I love Sam, but I don't know how to like relate to him. There's so much that I want to do with him. There's so much I try to do, and I kind of got a little teary-eyed because I'm a baby and I cry about basically everything. When Sam hugged him for making the igloo, because I was like, that was like a super real moment. It was kind of like, you know, early on in the series, he's talking about how having a kid who doesn't smile is hard and how he just wants to connect so badly with him. And then he gives him a hug and you can kind of feel the emotion behind like how strong of a moment that is for him. Mm-hmm. At least I felt so on the performance. I don't know.
Yeah, I think one of the things about Elsa's affair, I think even though the show was trying to make us feel bad for her, it made me feel bad for Doug. Because here's this guy who, he's a good guy, you know, and we find out later on in the show that when the kids were much, much younger, I think Sam was like 3 or 4 years old, he left the family for like 8 months. But he came back, he's been there ever since. He doesn't really know how to relate to Sam, but you can tell he loves him and cares about him. And I also thought it was interesting that whenever Sam's behavior is really out of bounds, like he really should not be doing something, Doug was the one who was there to see it, as opposed to Elsa, and also the one who pulled him back and was like, whoa, 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 you can't just go breaking into somebody's apartment because you want to give them chocolate-covered strawberries. You know, whoa, dude, you can't go locking your girlfriend in the closet just because she's touching your stuff too much and you don't like it. You know, he was the one that was always there when he did something wildly inappropriate, and was always able to pull him back by telling him the truth without being mean about it. And in a way that you knew he's got the best intentions for him, and he just wants to help his son grow. You know, and I also, because I like Doug, I did not like the way they treated him when they went to that autism meeting and the support group was giving him dirty looks like he was an asshole just because he didn't know all the proper terms for stuff when he was talking about Sam. I really didn't like that.
That's such a real moment, though. That's yeah. such like a, it's one of those things where just like, just coming from parts where like you attend something like that, where you're, if you're not in with the group, you're definitely like, you're, you don't, they don't try to make you feel like an outsider, but you already know like you're an outsider.
Yeah.
From like that happening.
Yeah. That was Elsa even says during, sorry, Corey. Elsa even says during that meeting when he's clear, when Doug is clearly not saying you, the proper, you, clearly not using the proper terms for everything. She even says, oh, we don't use any of that at home. So it's not even, okay, I guess I can see the group's idea that it's his fault because he hasn't been involved enough to know all the proper words for everything. But give the guy a break. Like, can't you just give the guy a break? He's not a dick. He's not beating the kid. He's not ignoring the kid. You know, he's doing, I really do think he's doing the best he can with him without being as into his treatment or therapies as Elsa has been.
Yeah, I've definitely been in that, like, similar situation in college, like, going to, they had, like, a group, a support group for, like, the LGBT kids on campus, and going, and I, like, didn't know all the right terms, and we were in a space that took using the, like, making it, make, really thought it was important to make it a safe space, so if you were using the wrong words, you'd get kind of shut up by the moderator, and I remember that feeling, and trying to mm-hmm. put an effort in, and then kind of getting it kind of slapped back in your face.
Yeah.
Right. Like, don't gatekeep me. I'm like showing up in like support.
Yeah.
Like, I want support. Oh, man. Yeah, definitely. It's just, oh, pop quiz. What are the four types of penguins in Antarctica?
Oh my God. There's no way. I got nothing.
Adelaide, Chinstrap, Emperor, Gentoo. I didn't even need to write that down. How do you guys not pick up on all these Antarctica facts?
No.
We were getting hit with them left and right.
I know. That was a big part of the show because that's what Sam's into. And I have to be honest, I just like, it just glazed right over me.
Yeah, yeah.
You said four types of penguins and I almost said ones with wings, ones with beaks, ones with flippers.
Dude, Sam would have been pissed at that yeah. response. He would not have appreciated.
Good thing he's not a real person.
That's a valid point. Who was the worst character in this series for you guys? Was it? I kind of have mixed feelings about. Oh gosh, was it Rashid? Raheed? I can't
Zahid.
Remember. Zahid.
Yeah, the guy he works with, his friend.
I feel like on one front they tried to make him. At first, I was like, because there was one part where he's like trying to hit on that girl in the Tektropolis place. He was definitely some good comedic relief, but I felt like at one point they tried to make him like, Sam thinks this guy's all that, and he's like super good with the ladies, but in actuality, he's not. But then I felt like later on, I was like, wait, so he is successful with the ladies, because he's like totally like making out with this girl like in front of him right now, and
yeah.
she can give him free piercings at Claire's and all that kind of stuff. But I don't know. What'd you think of him?
I don't know. I think you might be right. If anybody was a stereotypical character, it would be Zahid. Like your typical teen comedy nerd who thinks he's better with women, possibly, than he is. But then, like you said, at the end of the show, toward the end there, we see him making out with this really cute girl. So maybe he does know what he's talking about.
Yeah, you guys are all haters. I thought he was...
Your team Zahid?
Yeah, I am team Zahid.
I didn't hate him. I didn't hate him or anything. I just
Corey's
thought,
like, that's,
you know.
That's my life.
I mean, not that he was written extremely likable. Like, I get that he was kind of one note in what you expect, but I thought it was important that that Sam had these neurotypical people in his life that treat... Like, so he didn't edit his language at all.
Yeah.
He was himself in that's front true. Of his friend all the time. And he understood the things that set Sam off, you know. I thought that was, like, a really well-written character, and the fact that he talked to him the same way he would speak to any of his other friends in high school. I actually thought my...
What do you think of the girlfriend? I'm forgetting her name right now. That's actually the pop quiz. First person to name her name gets a point.
Paige.
Oh, man. Look at that. You're all over it, Corey. Corey gets the point.
Yep.
What did you guys think of her? For me, I kind of got Kimmy Gibbler vibes off her. Like, she was
Oh my God, I did too. That was what her character was. I did too. Really? Yes. Corey, same.
Yeah, she was Kimmy Gibbler, House Down.
Yeah.
I was like, if they ever do, like, a flashback episode of Fuller House and they need to, like, bring her back, I was like, she has the look, but then she also, like, has... Well, I was like, it's almost like that's what they were casting for. They were like, we need someone to play Kimmy Gibbler, and they're like, just kidding. This is a different show. I loved her character, though. I loved just, like, the goofiness of her and how quirky she was and how just... I don't know what... Because my wife kind of asked this question, and I don't think... This never came off to me, but maybe you guys felt differently. Were we supposed to assume that she has some issues going on herself, or is she just a weird girl?
I thought that myself.
Yeah, I thought she was on the spectrum at like first meet, like at the first episode, and then it became very clear that she was not. I thought in the like her first like their meet cute in the library when she first is trying to get him off the headphones and stuff like that. I was like, oh, okay, this. Is a nice girl who's also on the autism spectrum, but then that quickly, like, I feel like they dialed down her quirks a lot so that you got that she wasn't. But maybe she started off written one way and then they changed their mind in the midst of filming, because it was like an unclear situation at first, at least.
I think I'm glad that they didn't. I feel like I definitely would have lost respect for the series if it would have been like, oh, what are the odds? We pair up with the only other autistic girl in the school, and they have this, like, crazy romance between the two of them. I was like, I like the fact that she was quote-unquote normal. She wasn't, like, super normal. But, yeah, I'm glad that it appears she's, you know, just a regular, functional, normal person who gives hand jobs inside of igloos. Okay. There is definitely some, like, I can understand how people can say, like, some things were inappropriate. Like, that one review you were talking about, Adrian, the guy said he didn't like the fact that no one corrects Sam on some of the bad behaviors he's doing. And I kind of disagree with that in the sense, because I feel like we see why, because nobody intervenes and is like, Sam, you shouldn't have a practice girlfriend before you try to date your therapist, or you shouldn't, you know, it's inappropriate for you to have a date crush on your therapist or try to pursue a relationship with your therapist. That's what causes that big implosion with Sam, where he just has that, you know, full-on meltdown we see near the end of the series.
Of course, that was before his dad, I think his dad knew about the crush and had already told him that wasn't going to work. Is that right?
I feel like he said you should start with someone your own age. He didn't necessarily tell him to stop pursuing her.
Yeah.
But it was like, you need to, like, he kind of just said it as someone, like, who would assume that he would know what he's talking about. Like, find somebody else and you'll be fine. He didn't realize Sam was still had the goal of, like, I'm going to be with Julia in mind.
Yeah, but I think
he could have shut it down. Yeah, he could have shut it down. In at least a way, because as Sam describes, he says, like, just because I don't read social cues doesn't mean I'm not without empathy. When something's explained to me, then I feel for people. And if the dad was just like, hey, no, that's an unprofessional thing for her career that could really mess her up, he would have been like, oh, okay. Like, if it were a little more explicit in the explanation.
Yeah, but I think his dad didn't really understand how serious Sam was about wanting to date his therapist. I think if he knew that it was more than that, to him, it felt like more than just a crush, he would have been able to, like, completely shut it down, like Corey said. But because he didn't realize how serious it was, he just said, no, you know, you need to start with somebody your own age.
And see, I kind of thought that he did understand how serious it was, because when they're having him and his wife are having that big heart to heart near the end of the season, he kind of says, like, I knew about this crush, I knew what was going on, but he was wanting to talk to me and we were connecting and I haven't had that dynamic, so I got greedy and, you know, I just wanted him to be my go-to guy. So part of me, I think Doug is conflicted, where he didn't want to necessarily cut off the one means of communication he had, you know, like, aim this whole thing with Julia is his end. So if he says, like, Sam, you need to stop this, who knows when the next time Sam will try to come to him with anything.
Yeah, maybe so. But at the same time, Sam was coming to him with stuff just about dating in general and about his, about Paige in general, I feel like. So I think he, his dad had already kind of become like his go-to when it came to girls and dating and stuff like that.
Pop quiz. How many letters are in Michael Rapaport?
12.
I don't know. I haven't
14 yet.
Corey counted, so Corey's probably right. I just guessed.
Wait, but I said letters, though, so that means not all of them are going to be... this is a terrible question to ask. I'm just going to say,
yeah,
Corey, you get the point.
Oh, wait, I think I might have gotten it wrong. I think I gave him two... I thought I spelled it
R. Because he's got the P's. There's like three P's, so you got to subtract that out. This is just a very poor question.
It was 14 this originally. Never mind. If you counted all the letters.
This is the atypical quiz has not been my strongest quiz. I will admit.
Shame. They can't all be winners.
I know. I just wanted to mix it up. I wanted to do something fresh, and it just hasn't really played out the way I wanted to. It's because we've had such good discussion though today. Like, I'm loving, like, the dynamic here. Corey, this is awesome. You're giving us good stuff. Adrian, you're always giving good stuff.
That's what I do.
Not trying to belittle any of your past performances.
Wait, what was that?
I wasn't saying it was a compliment.
Okay.
I wasn't saying anything bad. So, going on to, like, the final question that I feel like. If you take away the autism, which is kind of hard to do in this show, I know. How do you rank this in terms of your typical, like, coming-of-age teen dramedy kind of deal? Would you put it on, like, the higher spectrum of what you've seen, lower end? Are you excited for a season two? Could you take it or leave it?
I think it's in the middle. I mean, I think it fits with, you know, it's not necessarily one of the better coming-of-age things I've seen, but it's certainly not terrible. And I'd be willing to watch a season two, yeah.
Yeah, I'd like a season two. I feel the same way. It's about midway, but if you take out the autism aspect of it, it could very easily just be family. The marriage is perhaps a little stale romantically, and one of the kids is getting all the attention. Like, you could substitute perhaps autism for, you know, maybe Sam is actually the star athlete, or she gets more attention because she's such a strong athlete. I think it's like probably middle as well. I would like to see a second season. I'd like to see how that whole the drama kind of explode.
Yeah.
And I am such a sucker for Raul Castillo, who played Nick, the bartender. He was on HBO's Looking. Ooh. I love him. So as long as I could get him back on the small screen, then I'm in.
I'm down for season two. I really wanted season two to start immediately after he found out about the affair.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I've been waiting the whole time for this. And they tease me. And I think there's enough elements that, because one of the things I was worried about going into this series was like, you know, I can only do about 90 minutes of like one of these like teen, you know, dramedies where it's like, I felt they were going to run out of material. And I felt like they have enough beyond Sam's autism going on with like Casey and like the parents and the therapist, if they decide to stay with Julia. I don't know if she's going to be in the next season or not. They kind of left it open. Like, they had that whole thing with like the whole pregnancy cliffhanger and like her getting ready to like tell off that dude for her winning and him coming back.
Yeah.
So we'll see how that shakes out. But yeah, I was pleasantly surprised. I'm excited for any potential season two that comes out of it. And hopefully Paige and Sam get back together. I want Sam to love her. I don't know if he's going to. I don't think you can come back from an Olive Garden moment like that.
Yeah, where he just tells her whole family that he doesn't love her and then gets up and walks out. After telling her whole family to try the buttered noodles.
Right? Hands down my favorite part of the show. Because, like, you know it's coming. The whole time I was like, don't do it. Please don't do it. Please don't do it. He's like, yeah, there is a problem. I don't love you. By the way, everyone try the buttered noodles. They're not on the menu, but you can still order them.
Yeah.
That is real. As a former server, how many people would want, like, I worked at a pasta restaurant, and there was a lot of folks wanted their plain butter noodles. I was like, this is too real. Flashbacks. No.
I need to like, ask this because I have a person who listens to the show who used to work at an Olive Garden, and I feel like if I share this story, I'm doing a disservice to him. did you ever have people who would come in for the soup and salad and they would want soup, but they would want it in the salad bowl?
What? Like
this is not
They'd want a
joke.
Big salad?
They would want...
Or like, they want well, the no, soup they want, in the, no, no, the big salad bowl.
They would want, the you know how you serve up the salad, they would want their soup inside of that with a ladle so that they could spoon it and they wouldn't have to wait for him to come back with the unlimited soup.
Oh.
And they would do it. Olive Garden would honor this.
Olive Garden are chumps. I worked for Macaroni Girl, the competitor.
Oh, wow.
Although my store is gone, so I guess Olive Garden wins.
That was just something, I was like, crazy stuff happens at Olive Garden. I completely believe that would happen.
What happens in Olive Garden stays at Olive Garden, unless you have a podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Shout out to Bill, by the way. I know you're listening. So that's going to be the end of the show today. Guys, thanks for being on the podcast. Adrian, obviously, you were obligated to be here. Corey, thanks for stopping by, though.
Thank you for having me.
Not that I don't, you know, I thank you for coming on. You put up with me.
It felt great not being obligated to be on.
Yeah.
Right. Until next time, guys, TV's overrated. Continue to cord cut. Catch you later.
Bye, guys.